Hi there, I'm Celeste Headley. Welcome to Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. It's a podcast that turns up the volume on new ideas about how women succeed. This is a pivotal moment for women in America. And to help you stay informed and make the best decisions possible, we bring you conversations with women who have innovative and proven strategies that can help you and other women advance in the workplace. We really hope to help you find balance between home life and work life. Today, we talk with Lita Citroen. She's an award-winning international reputation management and personal branding expert and CEO of Lita 360. Lita is a popular TEDx and keynote speaker and an instructor on LinkedIn Learning. I went through some documents, some articles that have been written on the top mistakes people make in branding. Can we sort of go through these?
Fun way to start, sure.
So it looks like the number one mistake is thinking you don't need it. That branding is for people like Kim Kardashian or Bill Gates, but that the average person doesn't need to worry about branding. Why is that a mistake?
Oh, okay. That's a great mistake. Because we think it's about a public persona. We think branding is what you do when you want likes or fans or you want to be famous. And what we've found is actually anyone who interacts with other people needs to think about branding. So I guess the exception would be if you're a hitman, you probably don't need to care about how people perceive you. But for the rest of us, you know, your brand is how the world experiences you and what they believe to be true. So whether you're a front desk person, a warehouse person, CEO of a company, an actress, you need to be concerned about public perception.
Here's another mistake, and it kind of follows directly out of what you just said, which is that they said people often think their branding has to do with their past, their history and experience, rather than what they want.
That's a huge mistake because branding is all about what you want. It's all about taking control of the narrative, if you will. But your past is part of that. Your past is the part we can't change, but it's the part we can shape into telling your story going forward. It's a piece of it. You know, it's interesting. I thought the first mistake might have been that people think they only need branding when they want to make a job change. Because that's usually when somebody comes to me and says, hey, I want to reinvent myself. It's like, well, how's that going to work? Because we don't necessarily reinvent ourselves. We explain our past. We share our hope and aspiration for the future. And we package it in a way that people will want to give us value, give us opportunity. That's branding. Your past is a piece of that, but it's not just about your past.
So is branding like selling yourself?
Very much so. Very much so. But in a very strategic and consistent way.
Okay. So another mistake people seem to make is that they only think about branding when it's a crisis, when they've done something wrong, they've said something they shouldn't on Twitter. How do you avoid that?
You know, my business, which has really evolved over the last 11 years of doing this on my own, leads me to three different people. And the first is someone who wants to build a brand, has never thought about this, never been intentional or strategic. The second is somebody who wants to pivot, right? Going from being a doctor to being a professor or something like that. And the third is what we call reputation repair. And those are people who realize the impact, for instance, of what you mentioned, an ill-fated tweet, an off-the-cuff comment in a public forum, or something even worse. And they think that if we just kind of spin it, that it would make it go away. And that isn't the case. We live in a very transparent world, and narrative is very important. It definitely can happen. And I've been very successful working with select individuals who've had very high profile crisis in their reputation. And really what they're looking at is viability going forward, because if they can't get a job and they can't lead a company or they can't share the message they want to share because of a mistake or several, then their viability and their livelihood goes away. So it has very serious implications, especially in the world that we live in today.
So coincidentally, today, The Onion, the satirical newspaper, released an article, and I want to read you just a couple sentences from it. They say, over the past decade, more and more citizens across the country have begun saving a portion of their paychecks to cover the costs of damage control should a controversial remark of theirs or a criminal allegation against them come to light. They added that Americans were increasingly coming to grips with the reality that hiring a team of seasoned crisis managers to spin a favorable narrative in the media can cost tens of thousands of dollars. I think that's probably funny because it's slightly true. Are there ways to guard against this before it becomes a crisis? And is brand management how you do that?
In my opinion, yes, it's how you do that. It's awareness, right? Awareness is the first step. And what I do is I teach people how to build a brand that has some credibility and has value before this happens, right? Because usually you think about it when something bad has happened and then you're trying to backfill. But if you're building a brand that people trust, that people can rely on and experience consistently, and there's confidence to it, and then something bad happens, whether it happens to you or you did it, and those lines are getting very blurry, then at least you have something off which to launch, right? A lot of the people who are finding me have never thought about this. And the only thing you find when you Google them is this mistake they made. And that's a tougher position to fix. But, you know, it's definitely fixable in most cases. It may not be pleasant and it may not be quick, but I've seen some people come back from some pretty big mistakes. And again, they're not just things that they did wrong. You might be caught up in something, or the company you worked for, or, you know, somebody close to you. We're seeing a lot of evidence of that right now. So it's definitely something to be thinking about now. I don't know about saving money for a crisis team, but there are a lot of things people can do to be more proactive and mindful about how they're showing up, right? I tell my audiences, you know, before you share that funny joke, I mean, just ask yourself, could it be offensive? Could it be something that you wouldn't be proud of a year from now or a week from now? And if it is, does it really need to be shared? You know, because the repercussions of one stupid comment can be damaging.
This is what makes it scary, though, right? Because brand managers ask us to be authentic. They try to tell us to be our true selves and not pretend to be someone else. That's right, right?
Yeah.
But what if your true self says dumb stuff? What if your true self makes bad jokes? And this makes people hesitant to tweet. It makes them afraid to share their authentic self.
Well, I think the point I was making earlier is it's about consistency. So if you consistently are known as someone who kind of speaks without thinking, or, you know, says things that people might bristle at, it's not as shocking, and you're building a brand that way. It can happen. It's the person who doesn't think before they post or makes a business decision that they think nobody's really going to pay attention to, that feels out of character, that feels shocking, that tends to get a lot of attention. And we're not just talking about tweets. We're talking about behavior at work, business decisions, relationships,
who you hire,
what they say. It has definitely gotten more visible. Everything has gotten more visible. But again, if you're coming at it from a strategic standpoint to say, how do I want to be perceived authentically? How do I want people to perceive me? Then you're going to filter those decisions through that lens and say, you know, I don't want to be judged by that one comment. Is it really that funny? I'll go down the hall and tell somebody.
So when you're speaking to audiences, I noticed that you warn them you're about to ask them some tough questions. And the number one tough question is, who are you? Like, what is it that you do? And what is your brand? And I wonder why that is so tough.
Well, I think it's just like it's easier for me to proofread something of yours than it is my own. You know, we can't hear our own voice the way others hear us. It's hard to look inside. And that question actually isn't as hard as the question that I ask, what do you want? right? Mm-hmm. How do you want people to perceive you? And, you know, I teach this in corporate settings, business settings, but I also teach this in the military. And it's a question that we don't think about very often. We think about it in a tactical standpoint, right? I need a pay raise. I want that fancy car. Something sparkly screams at me in a store. But we don't necessarily think about, at the end of your life, how do you want to be remembered? What kind of a legacy do you want to have left behind that you'll be proud of? And those are the questions that sometimes make people stop in their tracks. But they're the important questions. The branding comes before the marketing. And when I can take an audience through these tough questions and get them to a place where they can clearly see where they fit in, right? Where their purpose aligns with everything that they're doing, then the marketing, I hate to say it, the marketing feels easy, right? I know how to show up. I know how to introduce myself. I know what kind of body language and eye contact. I know how to dress. I know what kind of relationships and what my LinkedIn profile should look like because I've answered the hard questions first.
So branding, it sounds like, is not really about just asking yourself tough questions because, as you say, we can't see ourselves or hear ourselves. You'd have to consult other people that you trust.
Yes. I mean, it's definitely both. So, you know, what I do is I would start by asking an audience, what are your values? Because credibility comes when values match action. And we have a long conversation about what values really are, what they're not, what we think our parents want us to say our values are versus what's really in our heart and what we make critical decisions through. Your values are what drive your go, no-go decisions. Then I ask them to sort of put that aside and we do an assessment to see where they are now. Right? What would you believe if I were to ask five people what they thought of you? What words do you think they would use? Are they the same words? And we're not going to judge whether those words are right or wrong or get defensive or push back. We're just going to understand what the current perception we think looks like. And if I were working with a client, we would actually go out and market test this. But for an audience, I would ask them to think about what those perceptions look like right now. Then I ask them to bring their values back into the equation and we think about the future and we talk about the ultimate legacy that they want for themselves. And in some cases, the way they're seen now matches perfectly with how they want to leave this planet. In some cases, it doesn't. And either way is right. It just determines which door we choose for a strategy.
This sounds almost like therapy.
You know, I get that, but this is the heavy lifting part. This is the part where if you can own this, like I said, the rest becomes so easy because we're really talking about perception. We're not getting behind intention and motivation when we assess current reputation because you may not have been paying attention and that's okay. But what you want becomes clear. And then we talk about target audience. Who does this matter to? And we start putting the pieces together and create a strategy. And then that strategy lays over all the ways we communicate online, in person, verbal, nonverbal. And my clients just look at me and go, that's it? I mean, that didn't seem so hard. I mean, the hard part was the front part, but then the rest of it makes sense. And my goal isn't, you know, to have them have a structure that they have to constantly be thinking about. It becomes second nature over time. And it takes work. It absolutely does because we're leveling up constantly in our careers. But that consistency, that foundation is what is safe when things go wrong. And that's what we build off.
So you just said an important thing. You said it happens over time. How often do you get clients who think they can just rebrand, that they can change their logo or the colors on their brochures or whatever it may be, change their motto, and that's the extent of rebranding?
All the time. So, you know, I spent 20 years in corporate branding, and that was constant, right? I was a marketing officer, and anytime we had a new vision statement, redid the logo, everybody got a mouse pad and a coffee cup, and we were good. But personal branding, when you're dealing with individuals, is a different process. It uses the same tools, but it's, as you said, it feels more like therapy. but even working with companies as much as I did, if it isn't top down, bottom up, if it isn't really believed, the market sees that. And I think even today, the market would out it more publicly than just see it, which it might have done 20 years ago.
So are there number targets? In other words, are there a certain amount of followers that you need in order to be a successful brand? Do you have to be qualified as an influencer in order to be a successful brand?
The way to answer that question is, what's the goal, right? I have some clients I've taken off of social media.
Ooh, why?
Because it wasn't good for their brand to be on social media. We built an exclusive positioning for them and social media felt too retail. So the strategy drives the marketing, right? The strategy drives body language, appearance and presence, digital reputation, narrative, all of those touch points. How many followers? I don't know. You can buy followers. So is it really about numbers or is it about quality and engagement and having the right followers? Is it about having a big network or having a network of advocates and endorsers who will go out into the market and sell for you? I think the day used to be where we counted numbers. And even LinkedIn, you know, you get to 500 and then it's just 500 plus. So everybody tries to get to 501, you know, and then sort of takes their foot off the pedal going, phew, done, did that one. But I think we're really seeing a shift to quality over quantity now. And people with 100,000 followers on Instagram and no engagement and no, you know, conversation around it isn't building the influence that their strategy may have hoped for.
So are there different personalities for the social networks themselves? In other words, if I'm just a person who's looking to change my job or change a career, how do I approach each social network and where to invest my time?
That's a great question. And I love the question phrased that way because it really is, I hate to use this word, strategic, right? If you're looking to just share your personal life and have grandma and grandpa see pictures of the kids, have fun on Facebook. I mean, it is a playground. If you're looking to connect with business professionals and level up or elevate your professional status and have those kinds of conversations, we know to use LinkedIn. Instagram is coming into the scene for some businesses in ways we never had anticipated. And there are people who are thinking Twitter has literally gone off the rails. So I think it depends on the business. I think it depends on what the goal is. I have some clients doing very well on Facebook because of the nature of the brand and because of the nature of the business and the audience. That's marketing 101, is if the platform suits the strategy and the business and the audience, you invest in it. It's also a little bit of hit and miss. And I see a lot of clients trying different things. We give it, you know, 6 months. And if it doesn't work, we sort of slide over to another platform and see if we get the kind of results that we're looking for.
So let's talk a little bit about gender, because it seems like branding can be more difficult for women. And by that, I say we have all this research that shows assertive women, for example, are more likely to be viewed as unlikable. Smart women are more likely to be viewed as unlikable and unpromotable. The recent study showed that you should be so smart, but not too smart. Successful, but not too successful. How do you handle women in terms of, I know it's maddening.
I must be so unlikable because I'm smart and I'm successful. Wow. And I seem to have a lot
of
friends.
We're all dating. But here's all this research, and it's coming not just from men in corporate settings, but in women as well. So how do you handle that?
You know, that's an interesting one. I don't see as much of that in the day-to-day work that I do. And I don't doubt the research. I think what we're looking for is consistency. I have some female clients who are very strong personalities, very direct, very almost military in their communication. They're not military. And the people around them, they know what they're getting and they're comfortable with that. They've either signed up or they haven't. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of pushback. These women are also very clear that their style is very consistent with their values. And so they're very comfortable in their own skin. But I also see men struggle with how to have their voice and how to share who they are in an authentic way, knowing that sometimes that's not cool or not perceived as cool. So I think we're both kind of struggling to find a way to be clear and confident and consistent. I don't necessarily, in my work, see one over the other.
So how does a woman get started in her own business? This is something that you, I guess, probably know very, very well. I mean, you're a businesswoman. So how do you create a brand for yourself as a female? And is that a different challenge than the men?
You know, in my own experience, I had come from, like I said, 20 years of helping big brands build and stand up their value to the target market. And these were global brands on the professional services and on the consumer product side. And when it was me, I know that there were a few things that were really important. I wanted my name in the business. And I couldn't use my last name because it's a pretty famous car company.
Citroën, yeah.
Yeah. And I wanted to use my name because to me, it represented going all in. It represented, you know, I'm not hiding behind a company name. In my mind, it was a chance to really see if I could do this. I had to be really clear on my brand. One of the things I found when I did that current brand versus desired brand assessment is that I hadn't been paying attention to my own reputation. And perhaps there were some people who felt I hadn't been very empathetic along the way as I had built my career. So I had some repair of my own to do. And I had to be very consistent and clear about what my business and what I was going to stand for. Because however many people I was going to hire, the buck was going to stop with me. I was going to be fully accountable and fully responsible for what this business did. And I think coming at it from that approach, I asked a lot of questions. I didn't know what I didn't know. I'd never built a company. But a lot of people were very generous in sharing information, sharing what worked and what didn't. And 11 years later, with a successful business, I sort of use that to turn around and make sure that I'm always helping people come up behind. And I think that's something women do really, really well. We recognize that.
Would you share with us a couple mistakes that you made that other people can watch out for?
Hiring has always been my challenge. And I thought it was me for a long time until I realized when I asked other entrepreneurs, they all looked at me and said, oh, God, it's the worst. It's the worst and the hardest part. I tend to be attracted to people who are very social. And so I hire people who are very social, not necessarily. I didn't recognize early on that what I was trying to hire for was a skill set I didn't have. I just hired people I got along with, and that didn't always work out. And, you know, investing in and trying technology maybe before it was ready or platforms that weren't fully baked. I shared this in another podcast recently that I had built this entire online course. Tons of courses that I, you know, recorded, and I had a developer put this entire website together, and it flopped horribly. Nobody bought it. I couldn't drive enough traffic to it. And had I looked at that and said, wow, I should never be in the online course business because I'm obviously bad at it, I wouldn't have been receptive when lynda.com and later LinkedIn came to me and said, we want to do online courses, which is now a huge part of my business. So I think when we make mistakes or we do things that aren't necessarily successful, it's important to look at what the environment looked like. Was there something about the brand? Was there something about my level of investment or was it just timing? You know, was I just not ready? And I've been fortunate to have had many examples where I have learned some great lessons from things that didn't go as planned.
How do you avoid burnout?
I'm fortunate in that I have such diverse clients. They're all over the world. So they keep it fresh. They keep it interesting for me. I also, you know, I have three different components to my business. I write. I'm a published author and I continue to do that. I speak, so I get to work with amazing audiences, and then I consult. So that diversity for both the professional world and then the military, I mean, it is a dream job for a Gemini because it is all the different parts of my personality. And when I feel that it's starting to, you know, maybe get a little routine, I have to force myself to find something fresh about it. Read, take a course, talk to people, experience something new. And that usually elevates me back into a new learning, something I'm supposed to learn.
And how do you avoid overwork? I mean, when you work for yourself.
Yeah, I'd love to hear somebody answer that question. I'm still working on that one. I actually just had a conversation where I was thinking, okay, so if I got up 2 hours earlier and I could work an hour later, and then it's like, yeah, that's not feasible. You know, it's all about priorities. I try to surround myself with people who hold me accountable to the deliverables I've promised and keep me away from the bright and shiny objects that distract me. And at the end of the day, I've never dropped the ball. And I remind myself of that when I feel overwhelmed and just take a step back, look at the priorities, make a checklist, and just start working through it.
Do you mentor other women?
I do a lot of mentoring of women, but also of military veterans. And a lot of military veterans are women. So it's always fun when I get a mentoring call with a woman who has served her country and is now interested in starting. I had a call yet last week with a woman who wanted to open a yoga studio, or somebody who wants to be a speaker, or, you know, a project management consultant. We have to, because that's how we got here, is by people giving us that information. And I think it's really important, as I said earlier, to make sure you're constantly looking behind you to see who's coming behind. That's part of my brand. So I have to.
So what's the best way, if someone wanted to ask you to become their mentor, what's the best way for someone to do that?
You know, I would say everything starts with my website, and that's leda360.com. I think there you can learn about the work that I do and sort of see the paths that I take and figure out which one of those paths would be the most valuable. And then, I mean, I'm on every social media platform, shockingly, and just reach out. Let's have a conversation. Let's see. I'm very specific with mentoring that it isn't just, you know, life coaching or, as you mentioned, therapy. But if I can really add value to somebody's path and get them going faster, give them something that's valuable, I'm absolutely all in for that.
What is the advice people never ask you for that you wish they would?
The advice they never ask me for. Oh my goodness, because I've been asked everything.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, especially from the military, because they don't know what they don't know. I think the question that I don't get asked that I wish people would is this really worth it? Because my answer would be such a resounding yes. It's not easy work. It's not easy. It gets easier. Once you do the branding and you start building consistency and you're intentional, it absolutely gets easier. And it is so worth it. You're able to pivot. You're able to elevate and level up when you want. You're able to step back periodically and give yourself a breather. Everything feels intentional and things don't feel abstract. So many of the people that come to me say, I don't know how I got here. You know, I built a company or I'm really well known in my industry, but I don't really know what I did. And now I'm worried I won't replicate it. Or I don't know that this is what I want anymore, and I'm scared to make a change. And if they just knew that it was so worth it, I think more people would look inside in order to be able to follow this system.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I sense that there's so much more we could talk about, but we're out of time. So I just wanted to thank you.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Such great questions. Wow, get me on my toes.
Leda Citroen is a reputation management and personal branding expert. You can find out more about her and her company at leda360.com. If you enjoyed this conversation, I really hope you'll like, subscribe, and then maybe write a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or TuneIn. That helps other people find us. Please also consider sharing it with a friend or a colleague, and be sure to check out more offerings from one of the conferences for women near you. For now, I'm Celeste Headley, and this is Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. Thanks so much for listening. Be kind and be well.